These recordings of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein are provided courtesy of Congregation Ne'er Yisrael in London, where they were originally delivered.
The most unique feature of the opening section of Parshas Tetzaveh is the repetition on no less than three occasions of the word Ve'ato. Ve'ato Tetzaveh, or Ve'ato Tidaber, etc. And obviously, this is a matter which we have to look into. And an explanation of this phenomenon is given in the Sephora, at the very beginning of the parsha. The ator titzaveh, the use of the pronoun where it would seem to be superfluous. Says the Sephora as follows. Hinei ma she'omar ad achshav v'yosiso. When in Parshas Teruma, various instructions have been given to Moshe Rabbeinu in the form of either v'yosiso, v'nosato, or ta'aseh, yuvon, then the implication is she'ya'aseh ayedei acher. It's not that Moshe Rabbeinu has to do it himself, but rather see to it that it is done. V'zeh, meaning she'yitzaveh la'umonim she'ya'asu, to command the artisans to make it. And therefore there is no contradiction from the fact that the Torah says to Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Yosisa, and the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu will then appoint Bezalel. Because the fact that the word Osisa is used doesn't mean that you dafka have to do it, but rather that you should see to it that it is done. Ulefikach, therefore, Be'elu hashalosh mitzvos shetziva, therefore in regards to the three instructions which open our parsha, it says, ve'ato lehodia, or lehodio, to inform him, she'yasehu v'yatzmo, that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, without any intermediary, must perform what is being instructed. He personally has to be involved in commanding the Jewish people regarding the making of the oil from the olives. He has to be the one to officially appoint Aharon and his descendants as Kohanim. And and he is the one who has to speak to the various artisans who are involved in making the various items which are described below. So therefore, the parsha of Tetzaveh will begin with the pronoun ve'ato, which is mentioned three times, in order to emphasize that these tasks cannot be entrusted to any other person. They must be performed by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. The question that the Sephora does not address himself to is why it should be so. Why dafka on these three occasions that Moshe Rabbeinu should have to become involved himself? And in order to explain why this is so, we refer to the Ramban, of which I shall choose one or two sections, and you will notice immediately that the Ramban is in fact the basis for the Sephora's comments. Now is not the time to go into the fact that the Sephora makes very little reference to Rishonim who have preceded him, and nevertheless quotes most liberally from their thoughts. Now why, for instance, is it important that Moshe Rabbeinu should command concerning the oil? Says the Ramban, she'yivi'uhu lefonov, they must bring it before him, v'hu yirenu, and he will then be able to see the oil in huzach v'kosis koro'uy, whether it is beaten, whether it is the finest type of oil which is acceptable for the menorah. So you want to know why v'yator titzaveh? Because they have to bring the oil to you. You are the only one who can be entrusted to ensure that the oil is of the purity that is required. Similarly, why v'yato ha'krei v'lecho v'saharo nochicho, says the Ramban a few lines down, v'yato v'yatzmecho kikro'ein. You have to personally summon them, u'tevasrein b'malo hazos, and to announce to them that they are the ones amongst the Jewish people who are now going to hold high office. In other words, it is not appropriate that they should hear it from anyone else. They are now going to become the priests in HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctuary, and they are going to be the Kohanim L'dorei Doros. It is not appropriate that they should hear it from anybody else. And number three, the Chen V'yator Tidaber Kol Chachmelei, Sheyedaber Imohem Hu Atzmo. In Moshe Rabbeinu must speak to these Chachmelei. Why? Because Ki Hu Yakir Es Chochmasam. Because he is sensitive to the wisdom and talents of each individual person. The Yodea Hamelocha Horeuya Lehimaseir Lekol Echad Mehem, and therefore with Moshe Rabbeinu's sensitivity, which is not shared by anybody else, he will know precisely what type of task to entrust to each and every one. So that is why these three tasks have to be given to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh offers a fascinating insight into one of these particular items. V'yator hakreiv elecho es Aharon ochicha. And he notes that Moshe Rabbeinu is not told, and you shall anoint him, which was what actually happened. Aharon was anointed, and his sons. But says, no, v'yator hakreiv elecho. You shall bring him near to you. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says very beautifully, Hakreiv is melosha to draw near, and Hakreiv is also related to the word korban, a sacrifice. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh reminds us that originally Moshe Rabbeinu was to have been the Kohen. Kehuna was to have come from Moshe Rabbeinu. Except, as we know, and it's quoted by Rashi during the famous dialogue at the burning bush, where Moshe Rabbeinu refuses over a period of 7 days to fulfill the mission that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to entrust him with, namely to go back to Pharaoh, etc., etc., and during the course of that dialogue, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Halo, Aharon Achicho Halevi. On which Chazal say that your brother should have been the Levi, and you should have been the Kohen, but because of your reluctance, you are not going to be the Kohen Gadol. It is going to be given to your brother. Therefore, at the end of 7 days, when Moshe Rabbeinu will have officiated as a Kohen Gadol, because to tell somebody who's never had a taste that they're not going to be a Kohen Gadol, you tell me I'm not going to be the king of whatever it is, I have to tell you I lose no sleep about it. But if you have a time of... then to have it taken away from you, that's something different. That is why I mentioned many times before, when Chazal say in Pirkei Avos about certain Avedos, Motzi'in Esoada min Olam, they take you out, meaning from Olam Abba. What does it mean? We used to think it meant that it deprives you of the opportunity of ever having a Chelek in Olam Abba. Says the Negri Shmuel, no. Because to tell you that you'll never have a chelik in Olam Habo, it's no big deal, because none of us know what's going on there. And we really don't know what it is we're missing, like they say in the classic cliche. You don't know what you're missing. Like we don't know. So therefore, when we say Moshiach, that's the other in the world. So what we do is, say Chazal, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows him to go in for 5 minutes, and then Moshiach, that's the other in the world. Then the rest of eternity, he will have to live with the knowledge of what it is he could have had and what he doesn't have. As Alfred North White had said, the definition of tragedy is the difference between what is and what might have been. That's exactly what happens. So now Moshe Rabbeinu has officiated for 7 days. And now he is being told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your ultimate kapara for having refused all those days, is V'yatah, you personally, HaKreiv Eilecha. You are going to have to say to Aharon, you come near to where I am, and you take my place, and I step away. That is why it says, HaKreiv Eilecha, bring him near to where you are, meaning you are now a Kohen Gadol, and you know what it is You know the spirituality that you are enjoying. You know the special privileges that you participate in. And now you've got to take Aharon and say, no, you come in my place. That's Hakreiv, and that's Milushin Korban, because that's the ultimate Kapora. For you to actually, personally, have to say, no, I have to leave, and I have to initiate somebody else in my place. Interestingly, the Rebbe of Rofshitz said another homiletic thought on V'yato Hakreiv Elecha Es Aharon Achicha. Said very beautifully. He said Moshe Rabbeinu's shita was, as a leader, to be somewhat aloof. That is why in Mitzvah Shem, in next week's part, in Parshas Yisisa, the prophet says to Moshe, Yikach Eso Ohel, V'not Halo Michutz L'machane. Moshe Rabbeinu took his tent, and he pitched it outside the camp of Israel. The leadership is his bonus to keep himself aloof and apart. Of Aharon was driven by Brio to know this shot. So there, Kodesh Baruch Hu saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, I am offering would be worth your oath. If you win, it can't be boys to combine that aloofness in the life of the people. In other words, a combination of Moshe and Aharon. The Ato Hakreiv Elecha Elo Nachicha. What I would like you to do is, I would like you to combine the potential that you have, the Notalo Michutz L'Machane, combine that with the leader of Aharon, and that will make you into the perfect leader. A leader cannot be always be with the people, and a leader cannot be always apart from the people. There has to be that combination, and that's the combination that you should set as your ambition. Now the choosing of Aharon as a Kohen, as I say, we've referred to Chazal, that it has to do with a punishment for Moshe Rabbeinu for not being willing at the first request to proceed on the mission which was designed for him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the burning bush. However, I refer you now to the Sefer Pirkei Tzav from Rav Dichter, and he has most beautiful insights. And you may remember that Rav Dichter was the Rav we quoted in regards to some aspects of marriage. And we see here he is again, and quite fascinating that he honed in on these particular themes. And he writes as follows. I in Ibn Ezra Shekosav, talking to the Ibn Ezra at the beginning of this week's Sidra, discussing the choosing of Aharon as the ancestor of Kahuna. And the Ibn Ezra writes like this. In Habreta places, this man got broad shoulders, I've got to tell you, this is fascinating. The Kotzker Rebbe once said, I'm not going to go through it in the Yiddish, how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a man with shoulders to carry so much Yiras Shomayim? That was the Kotzker Rebbe said about Ibn Ezra. But unfortunately, the people who don't understand the Ibn Ezra, they see in him rather the radical, where they should be seeing the Yiras Shomayim. He writes like this, Ukevaro Mazdi Lecha, I have already alluded to you, he's referring to a comment he made in Parshas Voei, this is the Ibn Ezra, Loma Nivchar Aharon Lahakti Shol Lashem. How come that Aharon was chosen to be the ancestor of Kahuna? You know why? Da'avur Kevod Mishpachas Nachshon. Because of the kavod which is due to the family of Nachshon, that he married Nachshon's sister. You want to know why he's an ancestor of Kahuna? It has to do with who he married. The Ein Nidaber Al Moshe Adonenu. Ah, you'll say to me, says the Ibn Ezra, you have a tie against Moshe Rabbeinu, so why didn't he marry of somebody of similar stature? Because he's not going along with the Chazal that it was a punishment. He is telling you the reason why Aharon is the ancestor of Kahuna is because of whom he married. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu choose a wife of that order? Oh no. Kiboreachoya. Because at that particular time, Moshe Rabbeinu was running away for his life. Umi yitein lo ivris. And he didn't even have an opportunity of marrying amongst our own. Right? He married from Midian. Further, that's the first suggestion. And further, Ki Torah Chol Yisrael Al Moshe LeLamdom HaMitzvah LaDon Kol Dover Kosher. And also, the reason why he wasn't made a Kohen is he had enough to do without being a Kohen as well. After all, he's busy with judging the Jewish people, he's busy with giving them Torah, etc., etc. These are for two reasons. But the first reason, says Reb Mordechai Gifter, is fascinating. Because Mevua Midavara, what it is from the Ibn Ezra is as follows. Sha'af She'ein Lidabir Moshe. But even though Chas V'Sholom, one is not allowed to have any tie against Moshe Rabbeinu, as if he married and whom he married, but a horrible Pigam Chas V'Sholom, and there was no wrong in what he did, no deficiency Chas V'Sholom in his lifestyle, Mi kol makom, nevertheless, mi bechino zu, from this point of view, hoyle lechaper al b'nei Yisroel, why Aharon had an advantage over Moshe of Kehuna and not Moshe of Behiyos, nothing, because he married the sister of Nachshon. Hareish and Yisuin eilu hosifu lo maila li Aharon atzmo, from which we see, according to Ibn Ezra, that even though Moshe Rabbeinu was greater in many respects than Aharon, but because Aharon married who he married, marriage itself elevated Aharon into a different type of individual. Sounds of it, I'm only mentioning it for the point of view of comment. There used to be the old story where she says to him, you think that I'm a Rebbetzin because you're a rabbi? You're a rabbi because I'm a Rebbetzin. What we're seeing here is, or the Ibn Ezra saying, you want to know why Aaron is a Kohen? Aaron is a Kohen because he married the sister of Nachshon. Moshe Rabbeinu did not. Now, v'ro'isi lahovikan es asher higiyani badoel hayom miyedidi harav hovedei as Hashem Rabbi Yezri harav the canton Ohio. Okay. So I want to tell you now a letter I received from a friend of mine, and he also refers to this Ibn Ezra, and it has a modern relevance. And here it says like this. Fine. The Renes to which the Ibn Ezra is alluding, as I mentioned to you before, is a comment which he made in Parshas Voeira on the words Achos Nachshon, and he writes there, the Hizkir Achos Mushot HaKahuna, was the sister of Nachshon, says the Ibn Ezra, because that's the whole secret of Kahuna. She was the secret of Kahuna. It wasn't the Aharon on his own. Had he married anybody else, he's not fit to be the ancestor of Kahuna. She made him into the Rosh Kahuna. Says this rabbi writing to the Mordechai Gifter, Regilim Anu Lahavin, we are accustomed to saying, Sheho'inyin Likach Isha Bas Talmud Chochem, that the idea that a man is encouraged to marry the daughter of a Talmud Chochem, Mubishvil Abonim Shigivoldu Mehem. We're encouraged to think that the reason why a person should marry a man should marry a master is because the children will be of a certain order. No. Avolafiho Ibn Ezra. But according to Ibn Ezra, Hachidushu, the Chidush is why a man should seek to marry a Bastam al Chacham, Shagam Habal Mushpa Mehoisha Shehi Bastam al Chacham. That when a man marries a Bastam al Chacham, he himself becomes elevated spiritually. There is an enhancement in his own personality, in his own qualities, which occur through that union. And he becomes a finer and better person than beforehand. And the still the comparison is, in the same way as Aharon was zocher to the kahuna gedola, lamros, despite the fact, shi'alfi hasvara, that we might have thought according to logic, that Moshe Rabbeinu was more deserving. No. Avon mikivon shenasol leisho es achos nachshon hu gamke nishtane b'mala v'higir la madrigas kehuna gedela. On the contrary, Enoch inami Moshe Rabbeinu mitzad atzmo is greater than Aharon. But what Aharon became after he married the sister of Nachshon is a personality of a different type altogether. And that is why it is the union which transformed Aharon into the ancestor of Kahuna. The Yayin Kesubis Kuf Yodalef Uvarambam Hilches Deis. And if you look into Chazal and to the Rambam, you will see that the whole union of marrying a Basnam and Chacham is because through that you fulfill the mitzvah of Uledovko both to cleave to Hashem. So therefore, when one marries a Basnam and Chacham, you are performing the mitzvah Uledovko Bo. Now Uledovko Bo means that when there is a union, then there is an interplay. ודיבוק הוא נקרא שהדיבוק נעשה חלק להנזדבק אליו ונעשו חטיב הווחס. And דיבוק means that when two come together, there is, as it were, a sharing. וממילא גם הוא עולה למדרגה יסה גדולה, and therefore it is not only the children who are a special, it is the husband himself who through the union is elevated. The most fascinating insight into this whole cheshbon of Bas Talmud Chacham. And you see here that as far as the Ibn Ezra is concerned, the secret of Aharon's kahuna is in the fact that he married Achos Nachshon. Let us proceed now into one of the most fascinating areas of the Sidra, and that is the Urim V'Tumim. Now, in Perek Kafches, Pasuk Lamed, there is an actual reference made to the Urim V'Tumim. So let's get there, that pasuk, because we have it in front of us. V'nosato el choshen ha-mishpot, and you shall place onto this choshen ha-mishpot, a type of a breastplate, esawulim v'yesatumim, v'hoyu alei v'arom v'vo'o lefnei Hashem, v'noso ha-arom es mishpat v'nei Yisrael alibo'o lefnei Hashem tumim. Now, exactly what are these urim v'tumim? Well, there is a fascinating essay by the Ksav HaKabbalah we have here underneath the Pirkei Torah. And he writes as follows. V'harbeitim heisi. I have always had a matter of great curiosity. Shalomotsosi b'divrei ha-Rambam klum. The Rambam does not say one word about the Urim V'Tumim in his entire Mishnah Torah. Because in that chapter where he discusses the various items which are associated with not only the furniture of the Mishkan but also the dress of the Kohanim of the Kohen Gadol, and he tells you all about the Choshen and about the Ephod, and the Rambam doesn't say one word about the Urim V'Tumim. V'eich yishamet mikro mefurish. How can the Rambam leave out the pasuk? I mean, many things you can leave out, but you can't get away with leaving out a pasuk. And the pasuk says that an intrinsic part of the choshen mishpat is the Urim V'Tumim, and the Rambam doesn't say a word about it. Lochei nirali, therefore it appears to me, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, Diladato, that according to the Rambam, Ein Urim V'Tumim Shemos Kedoshim Kedasa Meforshim. It appears to me, therefore, quite conclusive that the Rambam's opinion is that the Urim V'Tumim is not the various forms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, which are written on parchment and which are folded and then put into the folds of the Choshen Mishpat, as the other Meforshim explain it. Ramban at length, as we had last year, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, in my humble opinion, it is quite conclusive from here that this opinion is not shared by the Rambam. So what is the Urim V'Tumim according to the Rambam? Rak Shenayim Osar Ho'avonim. It is indeed the 12 stones, Shehayu Kesuvim B'Shemos Shenayim Osar Shiftei Yisrael, on which were written the 12 tribes of Israel, Heim Aksmom. It is those stones themselves, Kiva'on HaKosuv Kan, B'Shem Urim V'Tumim. The Chiddush Nichlo. The Urim V'Tumim, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, in the opinion of the Rambam, is not the writing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, and then being inserted into the Choshen Mishpat. The Urim V'Tumim is none other than the stones themselves. And Urim V'Tumim are descriptive words for the stones. Kiheim atzmon, because as we know, the stones themselves, hayu me'irim, they were giving enlightenment. Utaminim b'divreihem, and whatever they said was perfect. Bevlitas osiyosehem el hanishal b'hem, when the letters on those stones lit up to convey the message. So therefore, Urim V'Tumim refers to these stones themselves. Called Urim V'Tumim, Ur Miloshen Or, meaning enlightenment, and Tumim Miloshen Tomim, because the stones not only gave enlightenment through what they said, but whatever they said was perfect. One could not improve and the message which they gave in response to the questioner. That's number one. They nearly owed, and it appears to me further. Apart from the appropriateness of these words, to describe the stones by virtue of the reply which they gave to the questioner. That is one reason why the name Urim Vetumim was appropriate for the stones. But even from the point of view of the stones themselves, Yitachin Aleihem Shem Zeh, this name is appropriate. Why? Yavonim Tovos Ko'elu, because stones of such quality, Mitziv Om Lihiyos Zoch, Bohir Umeir, they were so perfect, there was no blemish in these stones, they sparkled. There was nothing opaque about them, they were crystal clear. Is lochei nikru'u urim. That's why the stones were called urim. Rotsolo ma ba'ale or. They were as bright as one could possibly imagine. So that's another reason why the name urim is given to the stones. Gam ho avorim o'ele nilkechu lachoshin kivri yuson hatiri. And furthermore, we know that these stones were put into the sockets which were prepared for them in the choshen mishpat, and there was no blemish in the stones, no one was allowed to cut off a little bit or whatever it may be in order to adjust. These stones went into the Chosh and Mishpat in the same way as they had been created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lo sholak aleihem yad hachotzvin v'haposlim. No workman etched anything into them or cut part of it away. Kenosha Kosov Ramban, as the Ramban says, and indeed the Ramban says that that's why the Avonim, the stones in the Choshen Mishpat, are called Avnei Miluim. We might have thought Avnei Miluim meant they are the stones which are going to fill in into the socket. No, says the Ramban, Avnei Miluim means they are Avonim which are Molei. They are perfect. There's nothing missing. And indeed the Targum explains Avnei Miluim Avnei Shalmuksa, from the word Sholem. Shehoyu Shleimin, they were perfect. Velo Nechtzevu Mimechtzav Godol, Velo Nishtavu Mitumunosom Hatidi, they underwent no change. Ah, you'll say to me, if they underwent no change, so how did they manage to get the names of the various tribes written on them? I mean, how can you etch in the letters of the tribe if they're going to remain perfect? Says the Ksavik Abola portion. The Gam Kesila Sashemos Alehen Lo Hoyo Maisecholach. And even the names were not the work of an expert. Ke Omrom, as the rabbis tell us in the Gemara Soto, Avonim Halolu, regard for these stones, Ein Kosvin Alehen Bidio, you don't write on them with ink, Be Ein Mepharishin Alehen Biyizmel, and you don't dig into them with a knife. What the hell, you're going to get the names? Elo Navy Shamir, they brought this legendary insect, Umarelo Hen, and the guidance was given to the Shamir as to where it should go, the Hain near the Koin Mealehen. And the stones just divided out, but they would know that it wasn't as if an acid came out of the insect and made an etching into the stones. No, no. These stones miraculously parted in order to form those letters, but nothing that had been on the stones were taken away. So therefore, Hine Lishleimus Avonim Hoele, Shalonis Chaseme Henmi Briusonus Munosom Hativi, and it is for this reason that they are complete, that it is appropriate to refer to them as Tomim, the Tzon Lomar, Shalemin Viltichi Torom, perfect without any deficiency. So the Ksavet Avonis is, in my opinion, the Urim Vetumim are none other than the stones themselves, and they are in fact descriptive terms for the stones. And of course, as many of you know, when we look into the Parshios that discuss the various items as they are being manufactured, you will notice that it has no record whatsoever in the Torah of the Urim Vetumim actually having been made. So that would seem to confirm what the Rambam is saying. because no matter what they wear, there should have been some indication that in the same way as they made the Chumshin, and the same way as they made the Eifel, and the same way as they made the Meir, so they made the Urim and Thummim as well. But according to the Rambam, it's wonderful. The reason why there's no mention made of the making of the Urim and Thummim, because the Urim and Thummim are not separate from anything which has been mentioned before, namely the Avonim. The Avonim are in fact the Urim and Thummim. And what I found most fascinating is that in his Torah Shleima, he brings a quote in the name of the Rebbe Avraham ben Harambam, and the quote reads as follows: "The Chachamim Zal Omrim, and the Chachamim say, Shehein Toarim Lo Avonim, that the words Urim v'Tumim are descriptive words for the stones themselves." But that's Rebbe Avraham ben Harambam. So you can appreciate that he already had that Kabbalah from his father, that Urim v'Tumim are in fact none other than the Avonim. And here we see the genius of a man like the Ksava Kabbalah, that basing himself on his own intuition, he was mechaven to the emes, and that is the Shita Torah. Okay. Now we move on a little bit before we leave behind the Sidra and go to other matters. And that is, as we know, there is one item which is mentioned in Parshas Tetzaveh which seems to be out of place, because it is an article of furniture which was to be found in the Heichal. And lo and behold, it is not found in Parshas Terumah in connection with the Shulchan and the Menorah, etc., etc. But we have to wait until the end of Parshas Tetzaveh until we find mention of it, and that's Perek Lamed Kotogalos. V'yosisa Mizbeach Miktar Ketores. And you shall make a Mizbeach which is going to be used for the offering up of incense. And as I say, the classic question which is raised, and we have offered a number of answers to this question over the years, but Ein Beis HaMelech Below Chiddush, there's always something new which emerges. The question is, why was the Mizbeach on which Ketores was offered, why is it not mentioned together with the other items of the Heichal? Says the Oznayim LaTorah, the Zalman Sorotkin Zatzah. And he says as follows, it's on that page that you have with you, the Yosisa Mizbeach Miktar Ketores. I consider a very fascinating answer. Rabim Shoalim. There are many who ask. Lomo lo namach shivu zebi mekomo. Why is this command not found in what we would have considered a more appropriate place? Meshoshen et stava Moshe al asiyas klei ha-echol ha-shulchan v'ha-menorah. At the same time as Moshe Rabbeinu was giving his description of all the other items which are to be found in the Heichol. As he says, Ashulchan v'Hamenorah. So his answer is as follows. The Yesh Lomar, I would like to suggest. Sha'akelim ho'eile. Lo hoyer ahem shiniyim. Lihishtamish bahem. Im nitnu hu arishonim. Whereas, in the Beis HaMikdosh, as the Mishnah mentions in Chagigah, there were one or two copies made of the various articles. The Shulchan, the Menorah, so that if one of them became Tomei, they would be able to move in the substitute immediately, and the services would not be interrupted. However, in the Mishkan, they didn't have that facility. There was just the one Shulchan, the one Menorah, the one Mizbeach HaKetores, etc., etc. And furthermore, interesting. One Shulchan. They didn't have two Shulchans. There was no competition. There was no question of which is the more important Shulchan. Because there's only one. There's no shadow which is the most important Menorah. There's only one. But you got a bit of a problem in regard to the Mizbeah. Aval Mizbeah HaZahav Yesh Dugmaso V'Pesach Ohel Moed Hayno Mizbeah HaOla V'Lu Hayah Mizbeah HaKetores Amur B'Mekomo Yachad Im HaShulchan V'HaMenorah. Wonderful. If we would have put the Mizbeach HaKetores in Parshas Terumah together with the Mizbeach on which the Korbanos were sacrificed, we would have said, after all, we always have to make a choice. Which is the more important Mizbeach? And we would have come to the conclusion, incorrectly, that the Mizbeach on which the Ketores is being offered is the more important. Oraya, A, it's inside, and the Mizbeach HaNechoshes is outside, And number two, the Mizbeach on which Ketonis is offered is covered in gold. And the Mizbeach on which the Korbanos is offered is covered in copper. And furthermore, at the end of the day, what do you put under the Mizbeach HaZahav? Incense, the most beautiful of all Korbanos, says the Medrash Tanchumah. And what do you put on the Mizbeach HaNechoshes? Chele, dumb. So therefore, you might erroneously have concluded, had they both been in the same parsha, you would have made a choice. And when you have said, oh, if you ask me, which nobody does, if you ask me, which is the most important Mizbeach, I would of course have to reply that it's the Mizbeach Hazor, for the reasons which I've given you. And the truth of the matter is, it's not so. Because, apart from any other reason, if the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, for some reason, has even a chip taken out of it, of some major dimension, you can't offer the Korbanos. But if the Mizbeach HaZahav was to disappear altogether, you could still bring the Ketonis in its place. So in order to avoid that erroneous conclusion of comparing the Mizbeach HaZahav to the Mizbeach HaNechoshes more than favorably, we deliberately leave it out of that parsha and postpone it so that everybody can recognize that whereas it may be a Mizbeach HaZahav, and whereas it may be a Mizbeach on which the finest of all things are offered, namely the Ketores, it is still no competition for the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. That has quite a place in Parshas Terumah. So that is why he goes on to say, V'lu hoya Mizbeach HaGadolus Omer b'mekomo yachad im ha-shulcha v'ha-menorah, ha-yidu olim shehu ikar ha-mizbeach, v'ha-yidu mizalzilim b'mizbeach ha-lo-lo. And we would have been mizalzel in that Mizbeach. Why? Shehari Mizbeach HaKetoris Mitzupes Zahav. Because I might have said, well, the Mizbeach on which Ketoris is offered is covered in gold, it stands in the Heichel, and we offer up Ketoris, which is the Mufchar Sheva Korbanos, according to the Talukhumah, Masha'inke Mizbeach HaOlo, which is Mitzupes Nechoshes, the Yom of Pesach, and it's only at the door of the Heichel, but not inside, Umakriven Alok Chelev Adam, and what do you put on it at the end of the day, Chelev and Dam, Ulasinikov, for that reason, Lo nizkar mizbach hazov yachad im ha-shulcha v'ha-manora u'mizeh anu lomdim she'eino ikar. And from there we can deduce that as important it is not as vital as the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. Haraya shaharei nishlemu kol kalei ha-migdosh v'ha-chotzer v'hu lo nizkar acharak acharei kol. The Haraya is, and in part of Shuva, we mention all the vessels which are associated with the Mishkan, and that was left out in order to convey the impression that indeed it does not stand on the same level of importance as the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. That, says the Yoznaim Lasoda, is the reason why it is not put in Parshas Terumah, because having put it in the Parshas Terumah might have led us to erroneous conclusions as to its importance vis-a-vis the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. We might have concluded that it is even more important, and the answer is it is less important, as he concludes himself here, and that the theme which has already been noted in Meshach Chokman, Klichendu, and others, that if the Mizbeach HaNechoshes is missing, you can't bring the Korbanos. But if the Mizbeach HaZahav is missing, you can bring the Ketoris Bimkomo, as the Gemara says quite clearly in Gemara's Zohar. Okay. So this year is also Parshas Zohar. And here I've chosen two very beautiful inyonim. I'm hoping we'll have an opportunity to go through them as they deserve. Both of them me based brisk. Now, the first item that I've chosen is a section which I came across in a sefer which has come out recently in Eretz Yisrael on Purim, called Kiyum Uvekiblu, by a rabbi who I suppose is well known to some people as Tzimmer Brevda, a very fine Talmud Chacham. And he brings a famous comment on the Brisker Law. He says like this, Uveshem Olam Hagiz Mi Brisk Zal Shomati Mozeh. In the name of the Brisker Law, that's Rebelville, of course, because he was the Brisker Law at his time, I heard like this. Vihinei ha-kotav v'parsha zochol moneh protein rishoso shel ha-molech. When we look at the short master for parsha zochol, it will discuss there the various elements of his evil. The morsel. Achel kolocho baderech. Which of course is interpreted as loshon nikre. He came upon you of a sudden, without any advance warning. Vihisnap luz pizomis. Suddenly came upon you. It's also a lesson of Keri, which is a lesson of Tumah. He came upon you in all his uncleanliness. It's also a lesson of color. It's a lesson of cold. Because as we know, he can be compared to a person who jumps into a scalding bath, even though he dies. But people don't think it's as hot as people made it out to be. So it was with the Jewish people, even though he himself was defeated. But nobody was ever prepared to go near the Jewish people and to attack them, knowing them to be the chosen ones of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he went ahead, as it were, he cooled off the boiling waters which were the Bnei Yisrael. So Asher Korach is one Rosha. And then Vayizanev Bechor. Now Vayizanev Bechor, Chazal said, is related to the word Zonov. Shechotach milosehem v'zorkom kolapei ma'ala v'chirufim v'gidufim. What did he do? He took off the bris milas of these people and he threw them into the heavens and he screamed obscenities at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayizanev. And then what happened? Kol ha-necheshonim ha-chalecho. He attacked the weak ones. Al-mi hitnapel. Who did he attack? Al-chosle koach machmas chatoim shepotosim ha-woman. He attacked the weakness of our people. And v'yato yeis. And he knew that you were tired, but some of them thirst. V'yogeya. And you were also tired from the journey. And you know what it says at the end of the process? After it has told you of all the heinous crimes that he committed. The obscenity. The atrocities.
Below Yorei Elohim. You didn't damage one of
them. Below Yorei Elohim.
It's a Chaspele Hotsum.
Vayizanei Becho, Cholanecha Shuli Bachalecha, Viyato Yesh Viyogeya. And you know what? They're going to tell you what a naughty man he is. That below Yorei Elohim. He doesn't even fear that. Well, I would have thought that in the context of everything that's gone ahead, I mean, we can forgo the Kedusha. Right? As if to say, and after all I've told you about him, which is contained in the previous phrases, I've got something to tell you, which is so terrible you can't even believe. Below Yorei Elohim, that's oil out too long. He can die. So he says, the Omar Moron Zatzal. So he says, Rabbi Revelvel Brisker asked the question, and he answered it in the following way. There is a Gemara of the Kama. Nipnei Mahich Mirotera began of Yisumi the Gazlin. Why does a person who steals, unbeknown to the owner, a thief in the night, why does he have to pay double? Whereas a gazlan, a person who's a highway robber, he only has to repay the value of the object. Says the Gemara in Bava Kama. The gazlan has as much derech eretz for God as he has for man. He fights on a lot of them. A thief in the night shows that he has more respect than derech eretz for man. He doesn't want to be caught by him. But the fact that he's doing wrong in the sight of God doesn't give him any concern whatsoever. That's why the Gemara doesn't overcome. That's why the Ganav has to pay twice, and the Ganav only has to repay the object. Right? Say, Hishma Kamo Devin Livkod Kono, the Ganav equates the cover which should be given to the slave, namely man, with a cover that should be given to his owner, namely HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Zerlo Hishma Kamo Devin Livkod Kono, and the Ganav did not give them equal status. Therefore, the Alkeil Zehichmiru Olof Torah. Says the Belbel, that's the Lord. The Chayin Huva Amalek. And that is what the Torah wants to tell you about Amalek. Shahoyo Yore Miyor Mikotiga Holam Azeh. He was afraid of man. That's why he only came on you. That's why he only came on you suddenly. And that's why he only attacked the weakest. Because he was afraid of man. If he was afraid of man and afraid of God. So at least he's equating HaKadosh Baruch Hu and man the same way. If he was afraid of neither. That's also quote unquote kosher. Or not totally unkosher. The fact that he has taken every subterfuge in order to ensure that he will not come to harm as a result of man. And therefore attacks from behind. Attacks women and children, attacks us in a moment when we are tired and weary, so so that he has all the advantages because he's afraid against tackling us when we are prepared and when the people who are able to defend themselves are there in the forefront. And to compound matters, below Yorei Elohim, like the Gana, he shows more concern for what man will do to him than he does for a Christian. That is the Belville. That's why he says here, he was afraid of everything. And he took every possible fear into consideration. Who to fight against? When to fight against them? Below Yorei Elohim. What the Pasuk is saying is, he was afraid of the Jewish people. So he was afraid of the men. So he tackled the women and children. He was afraid even to take them out if they would be well. So he waited until they were after Yoyeki Yageya. And it's because he was afraid of them, he attacked them suddenly. Every cheshbon he took into account. And the one cheshbon that he should have taken into account in order at least to equate the respect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the respect for man? No. He wasn't interested below Yorei Elohim. He was only afraid of man. He wasn't afraid of God. And therefore, says the Belville, he's like the Ganeth who shows greater respect for man and fears him more. That's why he comes in at night surreptitiously, and that is why he is even more to be punished than the one who comes up brazenly and does exactly what he wants to do. And that's the question in below Yorei Elohim. It's a Devarim. Very, very beautiful. Let me move on then just for a few moments from the Parsha Zohar, to the Haftorah. And the Haftorah also contains a very fascinating Inyan, and one which most probably would not be so well known, so let me bring it. At the end of the Haftorah, Agag has been left alive, as you know. Vayomer Shmuel, and Shmuel comes over to Agag and says to him, Karseh Shikra Noshim Charbecha, in the same way as your sword has made many women bereft, Kein Tishakel Minoshim Imecha, so is this sword going to make your mother bereft. Vayeshaseh Shmuel es Agag. And so Shmuel cleaved him in two. He killed him. Now, the Hiksho Moron Heragon of Yitzchok Zev HaLevi Zatzal, the Belville asked the Kasha on this. Lama Hayok Tzorich Shmuel Lomar Shehoregu Mipenei Sheshikel Noshim Charbech. Why does Shmuel need to say to Agag, I am now going to kill you because you are a murderer? Typically, the Chai of Misa midin mechias amale. Why does he have to give cheshbonos? I'm killing you because you're a murderer, because you have made many women into widows. I'm killing you because you're amalek, and there's a din of kimcheh, zechel amalek. That's why I'm killing you. What's that for zubel cheshbonos? He ain't no man. Says the Belville, and don't say to me that the emes harogo midin mechias amalek. The emes is he killed him because of mechias amalek. And why did he say, I'm going to kill you because you're a murderer? That is only to explain why it is I'm going to kill you by the sword. And the Masha harogo b'sayit kidechizim ayishasav shmuel es agad behind the b'sayit zehoy midin roteach. You might say that, and you'd be wrong. He eshalom akein. You can't say that. Why? Because if you look at the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a collection of rabbinic comments from taken from Chazal, you will discover there, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani says, that in Shmuel judged Agad according to the laws of Bnei Noach, lo ve'edim ve'lo ve'atro'o. That for a crime, a Ben Noach does not have to be warned, and the circumstantial evidence is also sufficient. Why did he need to give these cheshbonos if he's killing you with din achiyas mechiyas amalek? What's that going to do with din bnei noach? What's going to do with edom and asra? Timchein zeichel amalek. Hello, my. You see from here, he says, harei dechol ikar din misaso hoya midin rotseach below mitzad din mechiyas amalek. The im harogom midin mechiyas amalek the hoya tzorich lomar shedano below edom below asra the koshekan. So the velvel tashi is again. Why did Shmuel have to say to him that the reason why I am killing you now is because you are a murderer? Why did he even have to give any speech? He could have said, just kill them out, Mechiyas Amalek. That was a Belville's cash, a famous cash. His son answered as follows. I'm not going to go down because it's a little involved. Let me explain. Many people are of the opinion that there is a din of Mechiyas Amalek which applies irrespective of circumstance. I have a mitzvah when I come across a member of that tribe of Amalek, I have a mitzvah to annihilate that individual, man, woman, and child. However, if you look into the Rambam, you will discover that it is not so. Even in regard to Amalek, if a member of that tribe is prepared to make peace with us and to accept our authority and to accept Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, there is no din of Mechiyas Amalek. The din of Mechiyas Amalek is only im lo hishlimu v'lo kiblu aleihem zayin Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. It could very well be, says the son in answer to the father's question, that Saul understood what the din of Mechiyas Amalek is. And God came to him and agreed to accept his authority and agreed to be metabel the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, as a result of which he thought he would be able to remain alive. And that is why, he says, the pasuk tells us, by its post, Shaul et Agag Melech Amalek Chai. Not that he took him alive, but that he captured him under circumstances which would have allowed Agag to remain alive. Namely, he made peace with him, he was in the Kabbalah Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, he accepted the authority of the Jewish people, and therefore Shaul says, that's it. I have fulfilled the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because under these circumstances there's no din of Mechiyas Amalek. That is why Shmuel went over to Agag and said to him, al din Mechiyas Amalek, there's no din of Mechiyas Amalek by you, because you've been mekabel sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, and you have agreed to be bound by the authority of the Torah, and you are subjecting yourself to the authority of the Jewish people. Well, I'm very sorry to tell you, you're a murderer. And as a murderer, you cannot escape judgment. You can be mekabel mitzvahs b'nei noach as a yomim. But if you're a murderer and you're a ben noach, then you have to be killed. So therefore, it could very well be that Shmuel had to give this particular law because there was no din of Mechiyas Amalek on this particular individual. Reb Velvel's son then offered what I consider to be an absolute masterpiece. Again, the question, why is it that Shmuel had to give a reason for killing Agag, which had nothing to do with Mechiyas Amalek, and on the contrary had to offer a reason why he is killed? Last week, as you may remember, in the course of that long Malbim at the beginning of the Parsha, we made reference to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is also quoted in the Rambam, that the Bnei Yisrael were commanded concerning three mitzvahs when they came into Eretz Yisrael. One was to appoint a king, the other was to destroy Amalek, and the other was to build a Beis HaMikdash. The Sefer HaYireim says as follows. This is not just a question of the order in which they are to be performed. It is to tell you, says the Yoreim, that the mitzvah to destroy Amalek is a mitzvah which devolves not on the individual member of the Jewish people, it devolves on the king. It's the king's job to see that it's done. That is why the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, before you get around to destroying Amalek, you've got to appoint a king, because the mitzvah to destroy Amalek doesn't devolve on the individual. It doesn't even devolve on the people. It devolves on the king. Like the king has a special mitzvah to write a special sefer Torah. The mitzvah mechiyas Amalek devolves on the king. If there's no king, there's no mitzvah. Says the Belvel son of Yoshaber, look through the Haftorah. Shaul brings Agag back alive. Shmuel says to Shaul, what did you do? And Shaul says, I listened to the people, I had Rachmanis, and here he is, and here they are. Says Shmuel to Shaul. The people learn the Haftorah. Other people walk out, but other people stay in and listen to the Haftorah. Says Rabbi Yoshaber, Shmuel says to Shaul, because you have acted in the way you have done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has removed your Malucha. From this moment on, you are no longer a king. Says Rabbi Yoshaber, if from this moment on there is no longer a king in Israel, then according to the Sefer HaYireim, the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek has been cancelled. It's in abeyance. Shmuel therefore goes over to Agag and says to him, don't fool yourself that because of the Din Melech by Mechias Amalek that you are going to get off scot-free. So Zion, I cannot kill you out Mechias Amalek, but I kill you out Shoshana. And there's subtlety here that the dethronement of Shaul, which took place during the middle part of the Haftorah, is the reason why Shmuel went over to him at the end and said to him what he said, to my mind is a masterpiece. It is something very special. So as I say, you have it there, it's something I believe which is well worth looking into. And of course, at the end of the day, as the Meshech Chochmo says, Yehuda ato yoducho achecho, the tribe of Yehuda is always going to be the tribe of Malchus, because Yodacho bi'oda toyevecho. We don't have mercy on our enemies. And Shaul lost his Malucha because he had mercy on the traditional enemies of the Jewish people. And as Chazal says, when a person is merciful when he should be cruel, he ends up being cruel when he should be merciful, as happened later on in Saul's career by Nov Nir HaKohanim. Something well worth remembering. The standards of what is cruel and what is kind are defined by the Torah. When we begin to, quote-unquote, improve on the standards of the Torah, as if to say, we are going to be more clement, we are going to be even more compassionate than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we forget that it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu who has designed humanity and who understands its failings and its abilities, that's the time when we open the Pandora's box for which the world still continues to pay. We leave it over.